This week on the Dunno Box Podcast, fast cars, Easter Sunday, WrestleMania, and deep conversations. We're going to go through it all while we're racing on Need for Speed. Let's get it started, man. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, the remake. We're going to play some of that this week instead of Red Dead. Chris, what you thinking this week, brother?
Let's do it. I'm all for it. See if I can outrun you on this game.
That or do you think you could be the cop that can come get me?
Well, it's already starting right now, so...
Well, I better share the screen and get this thing going then. All right, man. Well, it's been another week here at the Dunno Box Podcast. And like I said, man, for you, it is pretty much Super Bowl week. You you love some wrestling, so it's WrestleMania week. You love some Easter Sunday, which is your prime time. That and Christmas, but Easter Sunday really, really. And he has risen. He has risen. Because by the time this episode has aired, Easter Sunday is already over with. Chris, how are you
and
feeling, brother?
WrestleMania will be over as well.
And what's great is we can potentially get some predictions in. And by the time this episode airs, we'll see if those predictions have come true. Now, I will say this. I haven't done any research. The only thing I know about WrestleMania this year is that it is in Las Vegas. That is the only thing that I know about WrestleMania this year over at Allegiant Stadium. Talk to me a little bit about WrestleMania. Do you have any predictions? Well, we'll get into that. But what do you think about WrestleMania, the card this year?
So this year's WrestleMania is going to be great. I'm excited about it, but last year I was a little bit more excited because Cody Rhodes, who is my guy, you can see me wearing the shirt right here. He hadn't been the undisputed champ yet, and I had a feeling he was going to win the belt. Mania. And so The Rock got involved, all that good stuff. Oh, wow. I just ran into that. That's not great for me. But it's going to be great. So there's actually a documentary on Peacock. It's called Becoming a Spectacle. And it was also about the first WrestleMania in Las Vegas, WrestleMania 9. And they did that at Caesar's Palace. And I actually just watched that today. So it's great. Do you know who any of the matches that's going to be coming up for WrestleMania?
Well, I don't know any of the card. The only thing I know about WrestleMania this year is, of course, they do provide a brief history and things like that. And I know that they have scrubbed Brock Lesnar pretty much completely out of the history books when it comes to WrestleMania or anything like that. And I know that was a storyline that I had seen in the news. But as far as cards and things like that, I really do not know anything about WrestleMania this year.
Yeah, so I'll lead up to a couple of the matches. There's a couple of matches that I'm like, okay, like Drew McIntyre versus Damian Priest. They haven't been really doing a big build for that. It's just a regular street fight match. And then there's LA Knight. He's the Yeah Guy. I don't know if you've seen him in the Slim Jim commercials. Have you seen any of the Slim Jim commercials?
I have.
He's the Yeah Guy with the glasses and that kind of looks like the knockoff Rock. And then, man, I got busted already. Okay, well,
hey,
we'll
man,
stop.
look at me. Look at me. I'm over here being a good cop.
By the way, this game is like a remake, or not a remake, a re-release from the 2005 version.
Even earlier. I do wish that they would have kept some things original. Like, I know you got to update the cars and stuff like that, but at the same time, I kind of do miss the original version. I wish they would have just re-released it. But anyways, back to wrestling.
You could be the – there we go. So, and then LA Knight has the United States champ. So the way that it goes is there's the undisputed Universal champ, right? And that's like the champ over all WWE. There's the World Heavyweight Champ, and that's more like the working champion. And then there's the United States title, which is like kind of the mid title on SmackDown. And then the Intercontinental Champion is like the mid title for Monday Night Raw. So for the United States Championship, they are going to be LA Knight versus Jacob Fatu, and he is another Samoan. He's part of the Samoan, like, cousins like Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso.
Is he officially like a part of the bloodline or no?
So they did a So there was the original bloodline, and then there was, after Roman Reigns lost, then there became a new bloodline 2.0. So the bloodline 2.0 was Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, Tonga Loa, and then his brother Tama. And then they actually did a match where it was new bloodline versus old bloodline at War Games, and new bloodline lost. And so then Jacob Fatu, who's like, this dude looks like a guy that he would just beat you up on the street. Like, this guy is intense, but he's really good and he's really funny. And I kind of want to see him win because I really don't like LA Knight. I feel like he's just kind of a rock, stone cold knockoff. So they're fighting for the United States Championship. Also, too, one of the matches that I'm really interested in, other than the two main event matches of each night, is Charlotte Flair versus Tiffany Stratton. And I'll tell you why. Oh. Because apparently their promos got really heated, like in real life. Like, they went off script and they legitimately don't like each other. And it got really bad. Like, it got so bad that they had to cut like part of the real promo out of all the stuff, because Tiffany Stratton talked about how Charlotte had been divorced 3 times. And then Charlotte was like, oh yeah, is that why your boyfriend's in my DMs? And then it got really like heated.
It got real heated.
Yeah. So I kind of want to see it because Charlotte Flair is supposed to be a professional and Tiffany Stratton's only been in the business for like a year. And to see Charlotte Flair sink to that level, I'm like, bro, like, you're better than that. Come on now. And she was injured and she just came back at the Royal Rumble and won it and then got a title shot at WrestleMania. And everyone's kind of ticked off about that because they're like, you were gone for 8 months. There's no way you should come back and then like just be handed an opportunity.
Yeah, but Charlotte Flair, I mean, she's definitely a superstar when it comes to female wrestling. I mean, even me, who doesn't necessarily follow wrestling, knows about Charlotte Flair. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yes, but she's also like part of the older generation that's kind of dying out. So it's kind of like...
Yeah, she's definitely aged for sure. I mean, she's been around for quite a while to this point.
Yeah, she's been... She's had so much... A plastic surgery done. It's kind of messed up. So then Rhea Ripley, which everybody knows Rhea Ripley.
Right.
And everybody loves Rhea Ripley. Her and Bianca Belair are fighting for the Women's World Championship, but neither one of them are the world champion. They're going to fight the Women's World Champ, Io Sky, who is from Japan. And they're going to be fighting for the championship. So I don't know. I really like all three of them because they're really good at what they do. And I'm not sure who I want to win. They're just all so good.
Yeah. I don't know. Even from a non-wrestling fan, the one storyline that I have been able to keep up with, of course, is the whole Dirty Dom going against Judgment Day. And on, and the Rhea Ripley stuff. I mean, come on. Who doesn't like Rhea Ripley, in my opinion? One, I mean, of course, she's good looking. But two, it's I don't know. The WWE has done a very good job, even to non-fans like myself, with the Dirty Dom story. Because, I mean, WrestleMania, what was it now? 2 years ago, which is kind of wild to think about. With the whole when he fought Rey Mysterio, his dad. And everything like that. You know, they have made him such a good heel to where it's not like you just root against him, but it was nice watching Rhea Ripley take him on a couple times. And then, of course, when they did the cage over, I mean, it's like they've done a good job with marketing. Cause again, I don't really necessarily, oh, you've got me. Dang.
Huh?
So now we're one for one. We're one for one over
one
here.
One for one.
But, you know, even from a non-wrestling follower, I mean, I know Rhea Ripley and I know some of the storylines behind that. So they've done a very good job with that.
Yeah. So she's kind of moved on from the Judgment because she got kicked out of the Judgment Day. Her and Damian Priest, Dominic and his new girl, Liv Morgan, they kicked her out of the Judgment Day. and Damian Priest, and they had a little storyline, but now she's moved on. And Dominic is actually going to be challenging for the Intercontinental title versus, so his buddy Finn Balor is in the match, and they've kind of been hinting that they're going to turn on each other. And then the Intercontinental champion is Bron Breakker, who he is the son of Rick Steiner, the Steiner brothers from the 90s. Okay. And then there's a fourth guy, and they actually just signed him from AEW, but he's a luchador called Penta. And his brother, Rey Fénix, just got signed too. And Penta's the guy that goes Cero y Miedo, which means zero fear, and he has the crazy mask. So it's going to be a fatal four-way match for the Intercontinental Championship.
And which, that should be pretty interesting.
To be honest, as much crap as people talk about Dominic, I actually like him, not because he's a bad guy, but like he does such a good job of being a bad guy. Like
he's great at what he does, because anytime, I mean, whether it's wrestling, whether it's acting, whether it's whatever really the case may be, if you're watching something and it invokes emotion in you of like, oh man, I don't like this guy or whatever, he's doing a good job at what he's doing. He's a great actor. He's great at what he does. So, I mean, a lot of respect there because, yeah, I mean, he's great at what he does. He's great at being a heel, that's for sure.
And a lot of people have said, like, he is a genuinely nice person, like, outside of the ring, like, with meet and greets and stuff. He's just a really good guy. Sorry, my cat's making a cameo. And then,
of course,
the world heavyweight match between the men, and it's not even the main event of night one, but it's Gunther, and Gunther is like this big German guy, like huge.
Right,
like,
right.
And he like, his big thing is like chops. Like when he like chops you, it's crazy. Versus Jey Uso, who used to be part of the Uso brothers and part of the Bloodline. And he's the guy that does the yeet. Have you seen that guy?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I've seen him. And what did he, I hate to sound ignorant, but what did he win? He won
The Royal Rumble,
yeah. And that was kind of the unexpected thing of Jey Uso winning the Royal Rumble. I remember that being a storyline there.
Yeah, everybody thought it was going to be John Cena or CM Punk or somebody, or Roman Reigns, but it ended up being Jey Uso, which is crazy. So, which brings us to the main event of night one, which is Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins versus CM Punk in a triple threat match. So what's crazy is CM Punk was back in the business, and then around 2014, he left the business for 10 years. Well, he went to AEW and then all that.
He tried UFC too. I remember that.
Yeah. He had one fight. He was done. So CM Punk was the guy who actually had the idea for The Shield, which is the group that consisted of Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and at the time he was called Dean Ambrose, but John Moxley.
Which is John Moxley, he went from AEW over to back to WWE, or?
No, he's still in AEW right now.
Okay.
So CM Punk comes back in 2023, and Seth Rollins hates CM Punk, like legitimately doesn't like him, all that good stuff.
Yeah, wasn't there like a locker room beef or something between them at one point?
Yeah, he doesn't like CM Punk because he's like, you left and then tried to tear it down, right? So many of you guys know Paul Heyman, right? Paul Heyman is
the legendary crap talker.
Yep. And he was originally with CM Punk, and then he betrayed CM Punk to go with Brock Lesnar, and then betrayed Brock Lesnar to go with Roman Reigns. So the way the storyline goes is that during this whole new bloodline versus old bloodline, Roman Reigns needs another member, and CM Punk says he will help, but only if Paul Heyman will owe him a favor. And so they were building that up for months. It's like, what's the favor? What's the favor? What's the favor? And then in the Royal Rumble, CM Punk gets tossed out by Seth Rollins. And then Roman Reigns gets tossed out by Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins and CM Punk don't like each other. And Roman Reigns and CM Punk don't like each other. So nobody likes each other. But then CM Punk finally revealed that the favor would be that Paul Heyman would be by his side during WrestleMania. Also, too, you have to understand CM Punk has never main evented a WrestleMania, and that was his dream. And so the fact that he's in the main event of night one for WrestleMania is like a dream come true for him. And so now that Paul Heyman's by his side, and Paul Heyman kind of turned on Roman Reigns a little bit, and Roman Reigns turned on Paul Heyman, now all three of these guys hate each other. And people think that Paul Heyman is going to turn on both of them and align with Seth Rollins. So we'll see who wins the match.
Yeah. Which, nice little triple faceted story there with a lot of hate, apparently.
Yeah. There's a lot of, history there. And then the main event, Cody Rhodes versus John Cena. As you saw,
the follow up.
Did you die?
Oh, I wrecked. No, I wrecked. Dang it. You got me there.
So
right, I'll be the cop.
All right, we'll switch. So Cody Rhodes, as you guys know, at the Elimination Chamber, The Rock said, Cody, I want you to be my champion. I can put you in movies. I can make you the number one star in the world. All you got to do is sell your soul to me. Then at Elimination Chamber, John Cena won the Elimination Chamber, and The Rock was like, Cody, I'll be waiting for your answer at a Elimination Chamber. And so everyone was like, is Cody going to turn into a bad guy? Like, what's going to happen with Cody? This and that. Because Cody's a good guy. Everybody loves Cody.
Right.
And so then at Elimination Chamber, Cody says, Rock, I'm not going to turn my soul to you. You can go.
Screw yourself.
And everyone's like, yeah, Cody, all that. Well, then.
Whole infamous
moment. Then John Cena kicks Cody where the sun don't shine. And Travis Scott was there for some reason. I don't know why the heck Travis Scott was there.
Yeah, listen. And again, from somebody who doesn't necessarily follow wrestling, this does come up on my feed. And I guarantee you, now that we're talking about this, I'm going to have a lot more on my Instagram feed because it definitely listens to me.
Yeah.
But there has been so many comments and so many things of like, why was Travis Scott there? Years from now, it's going to be a history moment of WWE. And there's going to be so many people who's like, who is this guy in the ring? Or like, you know, they might know who Travis Scott is, but a lot of time musical folks come and go. But it was kind of weird to have him in the ring.
It's like when Dennis Rodman joined the NWO with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because I actually was in an automotive repair shop. I was getting car fixed today, and that we were watching The Last Dance about, you know, Michael Jordan, and they were talking about that. I mean, it's wild that Rodman went and skipped practice for the NBA Finals to do that. But anyways.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I thought you were going to add more. So
no,
apparently, and this actually happened, apparently Travis Scott, like, hit the crap out of Cody Rhodes and busted his eardrum, like, legitimately. This is not part of, like, the storyline. So I'm hoping Cody beats the crap out of Travis Scott if he shows up. But everyone's like, what the heck? John Cena turned heel because John Cena was a bad guy. I mean, a good guy forever. Like, make a wish
right,
guy.
Right, I mean, golly. Everything.
Like,
yeah.
They're like, John Cena can't turn into a bad guy. Like, kids were crushed, dude, like really crushed.
Saw the video of a different event where he like trashed a kid.
Oh yeah,
in the crowd. I saw that one.
And John Cena's like, you guys have always made fun of me in this business. I hate you. And Cody Rhodes is like, well, at least I didn't align myself with Vince McMahon. And boy, Cody was cooking him. So here's the thing though. John Cena is a 16-time world heavyweight champion, okay? He's won the belt 16 times. Ric Flair has won the belt 16 times. So if John Cena wins, he's going to break Hulk, or not Hulk, Ric Flair's record for being the most championship wins of all time. And that's kind of the thing is like, is John Cena going to win? Is Cody Rhodes going to drop the belt? Like, what's actually going to happen? Is WWE really going to say, you know what, Ric Flair, like, you know what? You used to hold the record and now you don't anymore.
I mean, I don't know, man. John Cena has made them, and not to talk about the business side of thing, but John Cena has been a superstar for so long and made them so much money. I've even heard about his new product lines that he's been coming out with now that he's turned heel, and apparently that's making a lot of money as well. So, I mean, it's a business just like anything else. If it's making you money, I know Ric Flair made them a lot of money too. Hulk Hogan made them a lot of money. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I feel like at least John Cena was the biggest thing in our generation wrestling. Because, I mean, I remember John Cena all over the place, especially when we were kids.
But I don't know if it was at – I can't remember which pay-per-view it was. Either it was Bad Blood or it was Survivor Series. But John Cena said, 2025 is going to be my last year. At the end of December 2025, I'm retiring. So it's like Cody is the new John Cena. He has put the company on his back and he has, like, you know, he does all the number one sales and everything.
Right.
So it's like, okay, are they going to give this record-breaking championship to John Cena for his last, is he going to get one more run with the belt? Like, is that going to happen? Everything in me says yes, because it's like, why wouldn't he get one more run with the belt? As much as I love Cody, like, I would hate to see him lose, but, like, if Cody loses, it's okay, because then he can...
He's still got a career ahead of him. I mean, he's still got a while to go. I mean, it's not
he
like
he can climb back up to the top, and everybody loves to see him chase to get the belt more than him actually having the belt. So, I don't know.
Oh, did I get you? Yeah. All right. We're 2 for 2 now. Wow. We're 2 for 2.
You got me. That's crazy.
I thought you were about to get away for a second.
I thought I was here. Too. Yeah.
But yeah, man. So WrestleMania this year should be pretty entertaining. I mean, even from somebody who doesn't actively follow it, it sounds like it's going to be pretty entertaining. It's interesting. It falls on Easter weekend.
It normally doesn't. There's rare instances where it does. But this time, really, because before it fell 2 weeks after Easter, and then it fell before Easter or something. I don't remember one year. No, yeah, it was when we watched it. It was the weekend before Easter. That's what it was.
Yeah, it was.
Let me tell you my thoughts on John Cena as a person, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for this. Okay. I personally don't think John Cena is that great of a person. I really don't.
And why is that?
Because of all the stuff with Vince McMahon and John Cena's, and I get being loyal to your friends, but when you actively say, yeah, that's my friend, even though he did sexual assault on somebody, he's my friend and I don't care. I still love him. It's like, okay, like, I get it, but you're, like, saying, hey, I stand with this guy. Like, come on now. Like, I don't know.
I get what you're saying, because I felt the same way with, and this is a totally different situation, but the whole Danny Masterson situation. Yep. And then, you know, of course, Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis, which I liked both of them as actor and actress. And, of course, I liked That 70s Show for a while. And individual things that both Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis did. But after that, when they wrote, even after they were faced with evidence to say, okay, no, he did this, right? Yeah. There's no denying that he did this. They still wrote letters and said, no, there's no way. Like, they tried to be character witnesses and said, oh, there's no way that this could have happened and things like that. And I understand knowing somebody and being in a state of denial. Like, I do understand that. But at the same time, when you're faced with a certain level of evidence, I do understand the whole, and I'm not saying that you would do anything bad, but like, if my best friend did something bad, it's like, I'm still going to love you as a person. But at the same time, I think that there's a place where it's like, there's no denying that you did something wrong. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's no denying you did something wrong and that I don't agree with what you did. I do respect and love you as a friend, and I believe that you can change. But to, it's when people are like, no, I don't think they did anything at all. I think that they're innocent. And there's clear evidence that that's not the case at all, right? I think that's when it's like, okay, we're in denial. And again, yep. I've never been through one of those situations before, but I do lose a certain level of respect because, you know, when there's indisputable evidence or even people plead guilty to certain things, I mean, there's no way that you can't not look at them differently. And there's no way that you can't not hold them accountable because, again, as a friend, I'm not saying that you would do anything wrong, Christopher. I don't believe that you would do anything crazy or anything like that because I know you. But at the same time, you know, if you were, there would definitely be a conversation. Of course, it'd be a closed door conversation, but it'd be one of those things of, hey man, you understand what you did was not right, and I'm going to hold you accountable for that because that's what good friends do. And not just that, but if people are talking about it, it's just like, hey, I still love him as a person, but I disagree with what he did. And I always question people that don't have that stance of, I understand loving them as a person, but when you don't disagree necessarily with what they did, that's when I have a problem with it.
Yeah, even if it, like you said, even if it's like a, hey, this person is a very close friend of mine. What they did was very horrible, and I still love them, but I'm committed to getting them help and to make sure that they don't go down this path again. Like, I'm going to walk with them and help get them some help, but what they did was not okay. Like, even that, like, that's still standing by your friend, but also right. saying, hey, like, yeah, my friend really did mess up, instead of being like, yeah, no, they didn't do that. Like, not like there does, like you said, have to be some accountability into, hey, I'm keeping him accountable, but I'm also going to love and help him and help him get some help through all this.
Because we all are human, and listen, people make huge mistakes, and on the levels, and I'm definitely not agreeing or saying, you know, what Vince McMahon did was right or what Danny Masterson did was right. They absolutely did wrong in a lot of things that they did, and they could have stopped at any point. But at the same time, understanding how life goes and not understanding the levels that they and the pressures that they go through at the high level that they operate at, you know, it's easy to be in a slippery slope situation. There's a lot of times where you hear, and it's easy to judge people. It's a totally different situation, but people who embezzle millions of dollars from companies, it's really easy to be like, oh man, you're a thief and you're whatever. But a lot of times, and even in some of these cases, it starts off small and it grows yeah. and grows and grows and grows and grows. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're a bad person inherently, but at the same time, it means that something started and it went out of control, because that's how anything works. That's how the devil works. It's a little seed that gets planted into your mind. And before you know it, it's turned into something really, really big and really, really shameful. But it's how you come back from that. You know what I mean? Yep. It's, I don't know why I'm turning this into preaching, but
yeah.
It reminds me of King David. You know, David did a lot of bad things. He did a lot of, I mean, he had a guy killed in the front line of battle because he was lusting after his wife and like, hey man, I got to have this chick so I can sleep with her. I mean, that's horrible. And by anybody yep. on today's standards, they would be canceled, and it would be terrible, right? But God still used them, and God still loved him and still forgave him for those things. It's not that he was inherently bad, but if you let yourself go down a certain road and you let yourself, you know, make a small decision of bad, it's a slippery slope. It's really slippery. But at the same time, again, that's where I think friends are true friends. They're responsible for those things of, oh man, you got me again.
And what and true what's friends crazy are. Is there right. were there were consequences from that story. Like his son died because of that. Like, you know, there yeah. were still consequences. He didn't get away scot free. But he had the heart to be like, you know what, I really messed up. Like, I gotta change.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, a lot of again what we've talked about and the things that are inherently bad is just they're so often to where nowadays, you know, and I wouldn't even say nowadays, it's happened all through history where people will have a mistake like that or things will happen like that. And, you know, they'll just continue to, through pride and ego, just be like, oh, no, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, I don't know. It's always about taking accountability and responsibility for your actions. Even if you've done something wrong, I believe that there is a certain point where you can even say, okay, I've done wrong all the way up until this point, but I'm going to make it right at this point, and that's still okay. It's learning the lesson throughout the entire thing, no matter how bad it is. But, you know, it's always hard. Then there's a lot of – it's funny because I'm touching on a lot of instances I'm seeing in life where there's a lot of people out there that – you know, they're so committed and they feel like they're chained to a situation because they have to just keep going with a certain situation and they have to just keep pretending like, no, everything is fine and it's cool and I didn't do anything wrong and everything like that. And it's like, nah, man, you can literally full on say, hey, I did wrong, but I choose to do right in this situation. And it won't absolve you, but it'll get you out quicker than if you just keep going right now.
Yep. Thanks for listening to me talk about wrestling for 30 minutes. If you want to go on that subject, I can talk about Hulk Hogan and how much I hate that guy. Well, I hate the wrong word, but how much I dislike that guy.
Yeah. Sure. Well, he's an Augusta native, man, and so are you. So.
No. I neither claim Hulk Hogan, nor do I claim Augusta, Georgia. Sorry, guys.
All right. There you go.
Even though that's where I was born and raised.
Oh, man. What's funny is he doesn't even claim that place. He was just born there.
No, he was born there, I think.
He was just born there.
I don't think he lived there for that long.
No, he didn't. He didn't. And he doesn't talk anything about Augusta, Georgia. So, I mean,
nope.
Augusta, Georgia talks about him, but he don't talk about Augusta, Georgia.
But there's not even a statue for Hulk Hogan.
No. Again, did he ever even go back? I mean, I don't think he ever went back as a wrestler or anything like that. The only reason I even knew he had an affiliation is we took a field trip to the Augusta Museum. What was it? The Augusta Museum of History or Museum of Art. And I had a picture of him of like, oh, yeah, he was born in Augusta. And I was like, really? Hulk Hogan was born in Augusta?
Yeah, I had to do
and like him. And I remember it was like a picture of Hulk Hogan. Really? About people who are from Augusta or what?
Yep. Yeah, but it was like you got to find some people that were either from Georgia or from Augusta that were famous. And I was like, okay, James Brown. What do you want me to put in there? Jimmy Dias?
Yeah, right.
That guy.
The only other person that I remember them having a picture of was like Lawrence Fishburne. If people even know who he is, the guy from The Matrix.
That guy's not from Augusta.
He was born there, apparently. Lawrence Fishburne?
It was also somebody that was in some famous Disney movie about like slavery, but it was like some weird one that I don't even remember. And then there was somebody that was from Gone with the Wind that played in Gone with the Wind that was from Augusta.
Yeah, but they were like a B character, weren't they? They weren't even like a main character.
Yeah, it wasn't anybody that was super serious. The only thing that came from Augusta, Georgia, and he wasn't even born there. He just grew up there, was James Brown.
And that was guy James was Brown. Something else I know too. I know they had, what was it, Woodrow Wilson? He was like,
oh, yeah, he lived there for a minute.
He lived there for a minute. I went to the Woodrow Wilson house, but he was only there from when he was like, what, 8 years old till he was a teenager and he moved out, which I can understand was probably pretty traumatic because apparently going to his house, he, from his bedroom window, like on, I don't remember where his like backyard was, but his backyard backed up against something and it was used as a Confederate like field hospital. And so they were talking about how he probably, there was a lot of like war policies he had. And it was probably based on the fact that he saw a lot of wounded victims of war. I was like, well, that's gotta be traumatic as a kid to
see that. You know who else was also there? also was in Augusta, Ken Wisenhunt.
Oh, yeah, the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah, yeah, the Arizona Cardinals coach who almost won the Super Bowl, but lost it at the last minute. Yeah,
remember that, I'll never forget that. Remember that, time we went to go see, what was it called? American Dream?
American Underdog.
That's what it was. The Kurt Warner story.
Yeah, Kurt Warner.
That was the first. Oh, dang it. That was the first movie I ever saw. He busted me. Michael would be like, yeah, I want to go see that in the movie theater. And I was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, and it was pretty good. I liked Kurt Warner as a quarterback. I didn't know a lot about his story. My question is, how much of that was, like, I know some of it was embellished, but how much of it was embellished, you know? But yeah. I do think it's a pretty interesting story, working at a grocery store and all the way up to, you know, arena football all the way up to what?
I like the guy all that the way played up
to NFL. Zachary. Yeah, I thought he was pretty good.
Some may say, I have a Kurt Warner story.
Yeah, from the grocery store all the way to the big time.
Yeah. And I just remember, after watching that movie, because there was a part where it was his son or his stepson or something, whatever it was.
The blind kid?
Blind, and he wanted to be a truck driver. And I remember at the end, like, the only thing your wife could ask was, like, what, did the kid grow up to be a truck driver? And it was like...
Man, that's my wife for you. She could care less about the sports story. She cares about the
character. He's on a side quest.
Yeah, right, right. Which apparently, you know, they went on to have a bunch of kids, bro. You looked that up. They went on to have a bunch of kids. In fact, just another little side story here. When I first, you know, the new NCAA game came out, and it was June or July of 2014, and you know, I bought it and was playing it. And my first team that I had as a coach was the Rice Owls. And the quarterback for the Rice Owls, because they use real players now, of course, with the NIL deal that they did and all this other stuff, was EJ Warner, which was Kurt Warner's kid. And I don't know if this is true in real life or if it was just the video game, but homie sucked, bro. And I remember he transferred out, like, after my first year, and my quarterback after that. Like, I struggled that first year, like, you wouldn't believe. And it was, like, the very next year I had a different quarterback and everything was so much better. And I was like, well, maybe Kurt Warner's kid just sucked. I don't know. But
undefeated? Or did you go 16-1?
No, I went... I think we won 11 games, but I was only an offensive coordinator. So we won like 11 games, and then we ended up getting into the playoffs, but then like losing in the playoffs. And then I took another coaching job after that.
What's funny is Mike and I, one thing we would do, which NCAA was it?
14. Yeah, it was 14, the last one that came out.
So whenever I'd go over to Micah's, no, this is when we were still – this is when we
So you're
were,
talking about back in the day. So that was NCAA 2010 because it had Michael Crabtree on the cover.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So never mind. So whenever I go over to Micah's house to hang out, we started a franchise and we're like, let's just pick a random team. So we picked the SMU team.
Mustangs. Yeah,
the Mustangs. And Michael was like, I'll be the offensive coordinator and you'll be the defensive coordinator. And so anytime the offense is on the field, Michael would have the controller. And then whenever defense was on the field, I'd have the controller. And I remember we played Tulane and Michael got so upset because we lost to Tulane because my defense wasn't really good or I wasn't calling good plays. And he was like, bro, he's like, we worked so hard and we were doing so good and we lost to Tulane because they were like a really bad team. It's funny.
Oh, you know, and it's funny because most people are going to listen to this and like Tulane's actually been pretty good for the last few years. But back in the day, Tulane was so bad that it's like, and he's being very nice because the conversation I had with him was Tulane, Christopher, we lost to Tulane. Like I was mad, bro. I was hot. I was so hot. And then I don't know why I feel like this kind of got me back. But so Chris and I, last time I visited with him, we played, he's got a older Madden. Which Madden do you have? What is it? 2016? 17. 17. And so we played Madden 17. Dude, I love playing those older Madden games because Madden now just absolutely sucks. But I'm not saying it was great in I got you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's, you know, it's fantastic back then, but it was a little bit better. And so we went as the – it was the first year as the Los Angeles Rams. And so we were like, okay, we're going to be the Rams. And, bro, we went 16-0. Or no, it was 15-0. And we got to the 16th game where we're going to be undefeated.
The very last
It was because of my offense. The only – It was 3-0 was the final score. All I needed to do was get the field goal, and it came down to the last play, and I missed the field goal. So I feel like that kind of got it back. Was
let me tell you, my defense all season, every game, we were killing it. We would keep them down to no more than 10 points. They wouldn't score more than 10 points at all. And I was – and that whole game, I kept the offense down to 3 points.
Three points.
My defense was going. I was getting interceptions. I was getting fumbles. I was stopping them, and we lost.
It was my fault. It was my offense that sucked. It was my offense that sucked. So, you know, that's always a part of a good friendship, man, is – you know, things come back around. What can I say?
I was like, you know what? We might as well not even go into the postseason right now because we're
we're not undefeated right now.
I was like, we're number one in the league, but I was like, you know what? We're undefeated, so it doesn't matter.
So, but yeah, it was. It's always fun to do both of those. Which actually, it was NCAA 08. I didn't get 2010 for a while because I remember 2010. I think had RG3, Robert Griffin III. And 2008 had Michael, and then Michael Crabtree was 2008. I think that was 2008 we had.
Who was like one player that you were excited for to come to the NFL, and then they ultimately just disappointed you?
Oh, man, I've had quite a few. There was a few that I like knew were going to bomb. One was Matt Leinart, if you remember that guy. I remember him. There was a long time. This kind of doesn't apply anymore, but there used to be the Heisman curse, where if you got the Heisman trophy. But I guess to answer your question, Reggie Bush. I don't know why. I was on the Reggie Bush hype train when I was a kid, and I really liked Reggie Bush when he was coming out of USC, and I thought that he was a really good running back and everything. And don't get me wrong, he had his flair in the NFL, but then he started dating that Kardashian, bro, and his career was over with.
That's also a curse.
The Kardashian curse? Yeah, you bet, because it was –
I've heard, like, if you date them, your career is just going to go –
Think about this, bro. Like, just in the NFL, or we can expand it to the NBA. So you had Reggie Bush, right? He dated them, and it went south. NBA, you had Lamar Odom. You remember that guy? And it was like, he was really good for the Lakers for a while. And then next thing you know, it was like, then he really, really sucked after that. Got injured all the time and everything like that. And I don't know if you know this, but a few years ago, Odell Beckham Jr. dated one of the Kardashians, and what is he doing now?
Nothing.
Like, what is he doing now, bro? So, just like, lesson learned, don't date a Kardashian.
Well,
if you're in the sports world.
It was Cat Williams who was like, there's got to be something wrong with you if Pete Davidson dumps you. He was like, there's got to be something wrong with you. And it's
okay,
like,
I got a hot take about that, bro. Like, and again, I'm a guy. And I'm a heterosexual male who does not, you know, find other guys attractive. But wasn't he voted like the like sexiest man in the world 1 year or something? And I'm just
Pete
like,
Pete Davidson or Cat Williams?
I was like, Pete Davidson. And I'm like, bro, looks goofy as heck, bro. I was like, are you serious right Williams? Now? Yeah. Could you imagine Cat Williams? But no, I'm just like, bro, looks goofy as mess. Like, are you serious? He was pretty good on Saturday Night Live, I will say, but a lot of the other things that he's done, I mean, he's just doofy. What can I say? Like, he's not he plays a character and he plays it really well. And if you like that character, that's great. But to me, I'm just like, man, he's just a doofy guy. I don't know.
Yeah, he really is goofy.
But anyways, Nah, you gotta love that whole thing with the Kardashians and everything like that. But there was quite a few players that went into the NFL that was just like, man, that's not gonna work out. A few other ones that I knew, like, man, everybody's on the hype train, but it's not going to work out. Probably one of the biggest flops ever was Jamarcus Russell. Like, everybody loved Jamarcus Russell coming out of LSU. It's like, bro, Jamarcus Russell ain't going to do nothing. And, bro, he crashed out at the Raiders. Oh, like, shoot. He was terrible.
Busted gotcha. Me.
But, yeah, he was terrible with the Raiders. And then going back to just a few years ago, which this guy's kind of making a comeback, so maybe I'll be wrong here in a few years, but you ever heard about Sam Darnold? Sam Darnold from USC? Oh, yeah. Everybody was like, yeah, Sam Darnold's going to be great, and he went to the Jets, and bro, homie was terrible. It's like, he's not that good in college. What blows my mind is sometimes these guys will be, you know, they'll start their senior year, and people will be like, oh yeah, they're great, and you're sitting here going, I mean, they're average at best. I don't think that they're fantastic. And really and truly, it's because they go to a big-time school and they're pretty. Like, they're good at interviews. They're good at whatever. And then before you know it, it's like, oh, man, they're getting drafted and all this other stuff. And cool, but again, at the same time, that'll make you a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah,
I don't know. I got a whole opinion on that. Chris will talk about wrestling. I'll go 30, 45 minutes just on football.
You know who it was for me? You know who it was for me?
Who's that?
Tim Tebow. I used to love
Tebow.
Tim Tebow. And I was like, yeah, this guy's a Christian. He's going to do great in the NFL. And then flop. And then he tried to make another comeback. Flop.
Yeah, he did. I will say this, though. When he was with Denver, like, he wasn't great, but he led him to the playoffs. I mean, homie won a playoff game with Denver. A lot of what ended up happening was John Elway didn't like him. A lot of the leadership didn't like him. And so they got rid of him. And a lot of the other teams that he played with were just not very talented. You know what I mean? Denver at the time was very talented because who did they plug in shortly thereafter? They plugged in Peyton Manning, an aged Peyton Manning. And Peyton Manning led them to a Super Bowl a few years later. And it was because they had a really talented defense. They had a lot of good receivers and whatnot. And so if you have a really talented team, especially, I wouldn't say nowadays it's hard to win without a good quarterback, like just the way the NFL rules are and things like that. But back in those days, I mean, think about when we were kids and kind of the transition into now, you didn't have to have a good quarterback in order to go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. A lot of times it was a good defense, or even if you had a good running back, if you had even a good piece on offense, you had a chance. Now it's, you have to have a really good quarterback and a really good offense in order to do that, because all the rules are based, are very offensive based. They're made to where people are going to score points. So you have to have a good offense in order to win things. It's just the way the rules have changed over the times.
Yeah.
They learn, and this is a whole other theory thing. I think they learn from the NBA, because the NBA, they set up a bunch of rules and different things in order for the offenses to be very big. They told a lot of the teams, hey, stop playing so much defense, because they realized that the viewers like to see scoring. They like to see scoring. Defense has become boring. Right. Even though it's a good fundamental to have, nobody wants to see an 80 to 90 game. Like, they don't want to see that.
Yeah.
People want to see when there's 3 points left and right. That's exciting. People want to see that sort of thing. And the same thing with football. It became a whole dynamic of nobody wants to see. I'm going to go with Tampa because I knew this one. Yeah, nobody wants to see a 3-0 game. Nobody wants to see Cadillac Williams run it 30 times a game for 3 yards apiece. Like, nobody wants to see that, right? People want to see long runs. People want to see deep passes. People want to see the big, exciting plays. They don't want to see dink and dunk. They don't want to see that. They want to see big, exciting, exhilarating, all-at-once plays. And so that's how they set it up. So it's just different now, I feel like.
But you know what? Tim Tebow is doing a lot of good things with his night to shine. Good for him.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. He's got a lot of charities going on and things like that. I mean, shoot, he actually was in the minor leagues for a long time. Up until just a few years ago, he was still in the minor leagues and trying to make baseball work and stuff like that, which you got to give some props. And reason being is because, at least to me, bro, minor leagues has got to be rough. That's got to be a rough schedule, because majors is one thing because you're making a lot of money and whatnot. But what is it, 62 games, something yep. like that for the majors? For the minors, it's a little less than that. But could you imagine, these guys are only making 40 to 50 grand a year, and they're yep. playing every other night pretty much. They're in different towns all the time. And, you know, that's got to be rough. That's not an easy schedule to do. I mean, that's it's pretty hard. So, and to keep up with his charities and do what he was doing, I mean, homie was living a pretty busy life. That's for sure.
Here's the thing. I did read one of his books, and it was talking about, like, don't quit when you're, you know, don't quit when you're down and this. And but it was very hard to relate to me, because the times he was talking about, like, being down, it was like, yeah, I didn't make it to the NFL, or baseball didn't work out for me. And it was kind of like, okay, this sounds like a very privileged
life. High-level problem. Like, I had a problem, but it was – yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's
like, and
it's
maybe one of some people do, but
– but, yeah, I mean – tell me if I'm wrong, and so we're going to go into a little bit of opinion now that you brought up Tim Tebow. I think what a lot of people didn't like Tim Tebow, and I can kind of see what's going on. Even being a Christian, I can see why, is have you ever seen kind of the – where he was mic'd up, or his interactions on the sideline or anything like that? Have you ever seen that, any of that? So
– no.
You know, I like Tim Tebow as a guy. He's very good interview-wise. But homie on the sidelines would be, like, singing Hillsong the entire time. And he'd be, like, going up to his teammates and be like, how great is our God, and stuff like that. And it's like, that's cool in, like, small doses. But he was doing that all the time. Like, extremely. And to me, personally, it goes into the whole
gimmick.
I don't think it was a gimmick. No, I don't think it was a gimmick. But what I do think is, you got to have some salt and light, man. You know what I mean? Like, if you're over salting something, it's going to taste bad, right? And so I think that it's just, if you do it so much, that's where people get irritated with you. I think that's what it was. It was just like, okay, we get it. You're a Christian. You're hoping that God is helping you out, and he probably is, which is fantastic. But again, kind of like some of the other stuff that we're talking about, like, why do you have to rub it in people's face all the time? Like, I get it, but people already know. People know that's what you're about. And if you do that a little bit, that's cool. And I'm not saying, like, don't do that all the time. But at the same time, if you were to do it any amount of the time, right? Like, even if it was the opposite front, where it was just like, man, I'm an atheist, right? I don't believe in anything. And you're sitting here, like, going all the time, like, yeah, God's not here to help me because there is no God. There is no God. There is no God. I'd be frustrated with you, too. Like, bro, believe what you want to believe. That's fine. But just stop saying it all the freaking time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I get that's how you believe. That's fantastic. But at the same time, we have a job to do. In any other profession, they're not allowing that kind of stuff, because it's like you're bringing some of that stuff into the workplace way too much. And again, I think maybe he just overdid it. Like, I think that it was such a popularity sticking point to where people liked it so much. Maybe this is your definition of a gimmick. Where I don't think it was a gimmick is because I truly believe that he believed in God. Oh, yeah. And I truly believe that he did have a very momentous amount of faith. And I do believe that any sort of thing that was happening, like, yeah, he's calling on God and he's praying and he's doing different things like that. But I think it just got to the point where it was like, okay, some of these people have had enough. Like, why don't we talk about football instead of God all the time? And I think that's kind of just where it went, where, because at what point does it become a distraction? Right? Because when you're talking about a team and what you're talking about with all that, if that's constantly what you're doing and it's not about football, okay, it's a little distracting. You know what I mean? You're just like, okay, yeah. I got it. I go to church too. I don't know. Personally, that's my opinion. What do you think about that? Like, do you think that that's kind of how it is? Again, yeah. I think it goes back to the whole salt and light thing of like, okay, you can be light, but at the same time, just be mindful and don't beat people over the head with it. Even if it isn't a soft manner, just don't beat people over the head with it.
Yeah. And I think it's like, if you're being annoying with it like that, like anybody who's coming and singing in my face, like I'm going to be like, dude, get out of my face. I don't care what you're singing. Like, but I do think his faith was genuine. I just was talking about that book where it was like, bro, it's kind of hard for me to connect with you about the, thing about like whenever I see these, they're like young Christian couples that have only been married for like a year or 2 years and they give marriage advice.
Yeah.
That annoys me because I'm like, I want to hear marriage advice for someone that's been married for like 40, 50 years, not these white Christian, like pretty people that have
realistically they're marriage influencers at this point, man. Yeah, Christian marriage influencers is what they are.
The oh yeah, like do you know what I mean? Like they're the perfect looking couple, all that. Like, nah, man. And then it's like, oh, they're always talking about the struggle, and it's like you've never had to go through anything. Have you ever met someone like that who talks about like, oh yeah, like just keep going, like just keep having faith, but you know that they've never had to go through anything hard. Like, and I know everyone's like, you know what? You never know what someone's going through, but you can tell this person has like lived a pretty privileged life.
Yeah, no. And I also understand what's hard is you only know what you're used to, right? But there's a lot of times where you see some people and, you know, everything is arbitrary. There's some people that probably look like me, and if they knew my whole life story, they'd be like, oh, that's not struggle. Think about what I've went through and da-da-da-da-da, and you probably agree like, oh, yeah, that's a lot harder than whatever I had to go through, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a lot of other people out there that, yeah, no, I get what you're saying, that will give advice, and you're going, yeah, but – and I'll call these people out. It's like you went to a private Christian school, you went to a private Christian university where your mom and dad paid for everything. You had a car at 16 that was completely paid for, that was brand new. It's like the biggest struggle that you, and I'm not even talking just financially, but it's like the biggest struggle that you had was, okay, I'm struggling and I'm, how do I put this? With just like the basic things. And
Yeah,
it's like, man, like, you know, I'm just struggling today because I'm tired and I still have to go to work. Okay, well, that's some people's baseline. Like, that's some people like, yeah, you have to do that plus this and plus that and plus all these other things. You have all these things on top of everything. And again, everything's arbitrary. There's some people that'll look at anybody's life experience and go, oh, that's nothing because I'm having to deal with my mom who has cancer and I'm, you know, caretaking for them and you don't know what that's like, or well, I'm dealing with the grandparent who I'm having to deal with, or I'm having to deal with a family member on top of things. But a lot of times it's these people who have pretty normal lives, pretty normal families, pretty normal everything. And it's not like your car is breaking down every week and you ain't got the money to go fix it or whatever, right? Like, they're not true struggles. They're just, oh man, I got a flat today and I had to go to Discount Tire to go get it patched. It's like, that's not a, like, it happens and it's frustrating, don't get me wrong, but that's not something that makes you give up. When you're on, you're down and out and you ain't got no money and you get a flat tire and you're going, man, I don't know how I can do this and pay my rent during the month.
Yeah.
That's a struggle. That's a hard bit. And it's like, okay, you know, there's, and again, we're just kind of pulling out examples, but at the same time, there's been a lot of times where it's like your family's popping off, to where family's having problems, to where your car's having problems, to where your work's having problems, to where everything all the way around is having problems. There's no certainty. There's no thing. And essentially what these people are saying is, you know, man, I had a flat tire this morning, but, you know, I almost wanted to give up on life, but God just reminded me, and you're just going, you wanted to give up because you had one flat tire? Imagine having all this other stuff happen to you, too, on top of that.
Bro, I saw this meme that said, it was like, God, why do you have to give your strongest battles to your toughest soldiers? And it's like, and it was like, actually, and it's like God replying, it's like, actually, you're my weakest soldier. And this is just an email that you need to reply to. I don't see what the problem is.
yeah. that's pretty good. That's kind of
what we're talking about. Did you wreck?
Wrecked. Yeah, I wrecked. Dang it. But no, it's, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was going to change the subject, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying it's all arbitrary. There's a lot of people out there that, you know, have really, really good lives. And, you know, what's sad is there's a lot of people that will find something to make a problem that's really not a problem. You can make a problem out of anything. Really and truly, you can make a problem out of anything. And again, I think a lot of this is, you know, God, I think that is so funny because, you know, God's like, oh man, you're my weakest soldier and I'm giving you very little and you're not failing at it, but you're struggling with it and you're complaining about it. It's like, I'm giving my strongest people the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And really and truly the strongest people. And what I've noticed over time is the strongest people are like, yeah, I'm going through this, but it's going to get better because God's going to bless me on the other side because I've gone through struggles before. And what's ended up happening is it's because he's preparing me for the blessings. You have to go through the hills or the valleys to get to the biggest mountains, and the highest mountains mean the biggest valleys too. And I feel like a lot of the time that's the attitude that strong people have, and the weak people are like, oh God, it's always something, you know, and it's like, it's really not anything. It's just basic life problems. Life is not a, life can be a fun experience and sometimes it's not. I mean, it is what it is.
It's like even when I think about it, it's like there are people across the world who are like not sure where their next meal is going to come from or, you know, or like there are Christians around the world that like, even if they read the Bible, they might die.
Be persecuted.
Having a Bible, like, so,
you know, and like, I'm gonna interrupt there. That's what really frustrates me too. I see sometimes about, you know, the Christian church in America is becoming persecuted. No, it's not. No, it's not, bro. Don't go there with me. There are so many places around the world to where they are truly persecuted. You don't know persecution in this country. Like, we can openly talk about Christianity and it's not a problem. There's a lot of places where you can't.
You're busted.
Dang it. But I've heard that one too. It's just like, well, we're getting to a persecuted place. It's like, how are we being persecuted? Maybe there was one person on the street that you shared God to, and they're like, I don't believe in that, and you shouldn't tell me that crap. Oh, we're being persecuted. It's like, it's not like you're being beat in the street by the public or by the government for talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's just a personal
crazy belief. Stuff. Crazy stuff. We'll change the subject because it's getting a little serious here.
Yeah, we can't be serious. Can't be so serious.
Not on WrestleMania week. Not on the Holy Week of Holy Week.
You're right.
Which I was going to ask you, but then again, I was like, you know what? Your family anything. I was like, is there any Easter memories you have or any Easter traditions that you're like, oh man, I remember this or I have a fond memory of Easter?
Not from my family, man.
Yeah.
Not really from my family, man.
I have one, but it was with you when we ate remember when we ate pizza on Easter and we watched was it Jerry Springer that we watched?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was like, I was like, I look upon that and I was like, that was a fun Easter. I remember that.
I'm telling you, man, sometimes Easter, some of them are just the best improv times because I remember you getting out of church and coming over to my house and because it was when we lived over on 25th Street, right?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, and not just about Easter, but I was talking with my wife about this not too long ago about, you know, there were some struggles in some times and one thing that I'm learning about in life and trying to learn is, you know, even if you're not where you're at and not where you want to be in life, to enjoy the moments, because there were definitely areas in that time where I'm just like, man, I don't enjoy where I'm at. I'm not making enough money, or I'm not doing whatever. And, you know, I wasn't happy with certain things. But do I remember that now? No. I think about those memories and that house that you're talking about, right? It wasn't the perfect house in the world, and it wasn't, you know, the greatest experience all the time. And there were some things that, you know, plumbing problems and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, all this other stuff. Oh, I chased the wrong car. Well, that's fun. But at the same time, I do, all I remember about that house is like, oh man, it had a nice fire pit out back. And we used to go back out in the backyard and go to the fire pit and stuff like that. And so really and truly what I'm learning about life is, I'm not saying it's like you never know what you got. You never know the good times until you're out of them or whatever.
Cherish memories.
But at the same time, I mean, it's true. It's like you never know what you take those things, those little things that you enjoy, because you're going to look back on them and go, man, that was actually pretty fun what I was doing at the time. And I'm trying to do that a little bit more as well. I do remember some of the other Easter traditions that other families did, especially at our church. So I did not like going to church on Easter when I was a kid and going to the church that we were going to. And I think a lot of the reason why, and I'm not talking crap on Easter. Easter is a good experience, and you need to go to church on Easter, especially, I mean, talk about the resurrection of Jesus. I mean, it's a very important story, and it's a very important event that happened if you're a Christian. But what I did not like about it is, you know, you have so many of these people that claim their church, your church, to be theirs. And I guess the biggest problem that I had was working in the church all that time, the whole entire year, going every single Sunday, every single Thursday night, you know, any sort of extras and whatever. And you have the people that go just on Christmas and just on Easter to check the block. And so what I would see a lot of the times was, if you remember the church that we went to, there was like these bushes that would put out magnolia flowers
every year.
And it was like the biggest thing that I always remembered was people would, of course, have their Sunday best dress, and they would go and they would take pictures and like family pictures in front of this magnolia plant and there and like bush, and there would be families just lined up. But a lot of times what was funny was it was not the families that went there every Sunday. It was like the families that did not. And I just remember the tradition being to go take a picture in front of that. But it was, again, primarily it was for a lot of the people that never went to church. And they would, and later on, it would be like Instagram, Facebook. You would see like, oh yeah, had such a great time at my church this week. It's just like, bro, you never come here. What are you talking about? What do you mean your church? It's like, you never come here, bro. It's like you come here twice a year and you come to take the picture.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, I get that, but it's like, you never know what God will do with that and those.
Yeah, no, and
but at the same time, I do get it. Where it's like, I do hate where it's like, yeah, we're just taking the picture just so we can get the likes for Instagram, or so we can just showcase what a cute family we are, or this and that. That's my feeling with anything, even when it's like, and hear me, I'm not against taking pictures like for date night or anything, but it's when it's like those couples or those families that only have to take pictures for social media. It's like they're trying to keep up an image and just doing it versus like, hey, this family actually enjoys being together and they're getting, because family photos are nice at events like that.
Oh, absolutely.
But no, absolutely. I get what you mean.
Yeah. And those are the traditions that I remember that a lot of people did. But my family particularly did not. We kind of talked about this a few days ago. The background that my family initially came from before we went to the church that I met you at was, you know, very staunch Pentecostal. And I remember we left that church when I was four because we moved to Germany. But it had to be like when I was 3 or 4. And one of the first memories I ever had of Easter was in a Sunday school class. They had us make a cat of nine tails, like a little freaking, I don't remember what it was made of, but it was like a little stick with like leather strips. And they didn't have us like put the ends of it, but they like explained, you know, cat of nine tails and what that was. And again, this had to be pretty impactful for me to remember this because I was like 3 years old. So it had to be pretty impactful. But I remember them talking about like beating Jesus and things like that. And they had us smack our wrist, like with the little leather straps and whatnot. And bro, I remember, like, I don't know why I remember that. Again, I truly believe if you remember something as a child, either it was, one, it was traumatic to you, or it was so impactful that it was worth remembering, that your memory was like, oh, we're remembering this one, buddy. But that's one of the first Easter memories I've, and it still just blows my mind of, man, y'all talked about cat of nine tails with kids, you know, and went really in depth on how gory Easter can be. Like, don't get me wrong, I do believe in, okay, you need to tell the Easter story, but there's such a thing as too young. That is for sure. Talking about the gory parts.
That's crazy, dude. That's really, dude, I don't know. I don't think I told you this, but did you know this past week, the staff, we actually ate a Passover meal together. It was really cool.
Oh, really?
And learned,
that's
like,
cool. What
the Passover meal means, dude. And it is like, you want to talk about like nerding out, like Bible nerding on how all that stuff like relates to Jesus, like even from the meal and like all the rituals and stuff they do, bro. Like, it is, it's really cool. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And one of my favorite Sundays, I know it was last Sunday, one of my favorite Sundays was actually Palm Sunday. I've been to a few churches, and I don't remember if it was the church that we went to did this too, but they actually had palm leaves, and they did like a whole kind of demonstration of, you know, Palm Sunday and Jesus walking and them laying the palms down and things like that. And I really enjoyed that. In fact, Palm Sunday is kind of one of my favorite Sundays for some reason.
This is like shifting gears, but you remember, what was it 2 years ago? Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. I guess a year and a half ago when we, Thanksgiving, we all like met up at the lake. And then we watched Jerry Springer, or Divorce Court. It was Divorce Court. And
Divorce Court. Maury. Well, we watched Maury too.
Oh, yeah.
For paternity.
There's something about like holidays and trash TV when me and Micah, we get together. It's just great. Like, it's a great time.
Yeah. For those of you who have been with us, OGs, you know, that's why we called our network Trash Can, you know, because it was just. At first, we were going to make a streaming service of just, did you wreck me? Dang it. I almost had you, bro. I almost had you. Dang. But we almost had a, for a while, we had a free streaming service, kind of Trash TV. And so we called it Trash Can TV just because it's, I don't know, it's fun to watch. And I don't know, I still watch a lot, some Trash TV. Trash TV now is kind of blended into a lot of reality TV, I feel like.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm not really talking about that kind of stuff, but sometimes, bro, when it's like I'm not necessarily feeling the best about myself, you watch a few episodes of Jerry Springer, real or fake, you feel real good about yourself.
Yeah.
You feel real good about yourself.
Yeah, it's great. Did you ever do any Easter eggs hunts growing up? I never did any.
I did. So when I lived in Germany, I did, actually.
Really?
We had a few. And that was a lot when, but I mean, then again, you know, my parental or my paternal unit, he was off to war a lot of those times. So it was just, and my maternal unit, she was very involved in the little chapel that we were a part of. She actually sang in that. So I remember, but think about it. It was just a lot of the base kids, you know, and most of our dads were at war kind of thing. So it was like, they did little events for us all the time, but it was a government sanctioned Easter egg hunt. So as fun as you can think about that, but I don't really remember what it was. I think it was just, you know, you had the little plastic Easter egg, and I think it was just full of candy. Like, I think I just remember it being just the little candy bars in there. I don't think it was ever anything more than that. I've seen some Easter egg hunts where they'll put like money in there, or they'll put
I was just talking
all
about
sorts
that
of different stuff.
Families will be putting like 20s and $100. I was like,
yeah, that's pretty wild to me,
dude. Let me come to your house
for Easter.
So wild.
Yeah, I've never had that experience. It's like, you know, maybe little bits of candy, never any money. I've never had like, oh yeah, maybe I, and if I did, I obviously didn't get it. Maybe there was like one $20 bill in like the grand Easter egg if you found it or something, but I don't remember that. You know what I mean?
So
if that was the case.
Your grandmother never did Easter egg hunts, because I feel like your Umi would do something like that. She never did
through
that for
their church. No, but then again, I never was around there during Easter. And when I was 4 and under, so I don't really remember it. Again, the only thing I remember from those times were the cat of nine tails. That's the only thing I remember from back then. But if we did, I was so young that I didn't quite remember it. But after that, we never visited them around Easter time. So, but if it would have been, it would have been through their church. Like, they would have been, through the grandparents. It would have been through the church.
Okay. I've never done, except for through the church. And I don't ever remember doing them, but I've never done an Easter egg hunt. Like, my parents never did that. And I've never been trick or treating at all.
Yeah. Trick or treating, going back to Halloween, I've only technically been once. And, bro, do you even know this story? I don't know if you know this story. It was actually, I don't even know if you can consider it a date. It was my 8th grade year, and it was this girl named Caitlin. And, what? Yeah, and she
told me about this.
Yeah, so she was like, it was kind of a weird situation. So her mom and had been married and divorced, I don't know how many times. I don't know. But basically, she was with a guy. And the guy had like 4 kids, and then Caitlin's mom had like 3 to 4 kids. And so they were all living together. And so she had like 8 siblings/step siblings. So it was kind of this whole thing. And I remember she invited me to go trick or treating, and I didn't tell my parents that's what it was. I told my parents that it was for trunk or treat at this girl's church. And so I remember they dropped me off at her house. And what was cool is like her mom was, Caitlin's mom was like, I had told her what the thing was. I was like, they're not going to let me come with you unless you tell me or you tell her like, or tell my parents that we're going to church. And so she even played along with it. Like, my parents dropped her off and was like, yeah, we're going to this church and whatever. And she played along with it. And we ended up going trick-or-treating in the neighborhood. And that was my only time trick-or-treating. That was it. And it was with this girl, Caitlin. Yeah. And I don't remember much from the trick-or-treating besides just, of course, going around to houses and, you know, doing that whole thing. The only other thing that I remember was which I don't know why you disappeared from the.
Yeah, sorry guys, my internet cut out, so I had to restart my PlayStation. But I'm hopping back on.
Yeah, no worries. We'll keep talking about this Halloween story. I don't know. Interesting enough, we're on Halloween at this point. Speaking of holidays, but essentially, I just remember going around, and there was this one person. You know, some people during Halloween they'll do a full haunted house, like they'll do the full house, haunted house, and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And this person had a haunted house. And I remember we went into their house and it kind of like routed through the basement. And so it was me and Caitlin. And I remember being like, oh yeah, this is my chance. Cause this sounds such like a Bobby Hill thing, but I was like, yeah, I know that this is when like girls want to be like kissing if you protect them from the scary bits. So I was like, we're going to stay close to her. And when it comes time, you're going to be the big, strong man and you're going to protect against the scary parts that happen. And I remember there was like this guy who came out in a ski mask, of course, because what was it, Freddy or Jason? I'm not big on the horror movies, but Freddy or Jason with the ski mask. So the guy pops out, and of course, Caitlin screams and like runs. And I just remember being like, don't worry, I got this. And I just remember standing there being like, what? If you touch me, I'll sue you.
What did the guy say?
He didn't do nothing. He didn't do nothing. He just kept like trying to scare me. And I just remember walking off, and she was just like, she's like, you're so brave. Did I get a kiss? No, I didn't.
Dang, bro. Dude, you're way opposite than me, because I'll admit to you guys, I'm a scaredy cat. Like, I'm a big scaredy cat. And so, like, I go through those things. I went on a date at one of those, and it was on my birthday. And I went through
one that I copped out on?
No, I was already going on this, like, date. It was all good. And I was just like, yeah, like, I'm going to walk through. But, bro, I got so scared. Like, I was walking through that thing, and I made the mistake of wearing my cowboy hat. And they love to pick on you. Like, if you're doing that kind of stuff, they love to pick on you. And so they were like, there was this one scene, or not one scene, this one place where there were these two like creepy girls from, what's it called? The Shining. And they and like that kind of stuff where it's like the creepy girl, like doll stuff. Oh, that scares the living daylights. And I remember they were like, come play with us, cowboy. And I was like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. But we got through it. It was all good.
I think the only thing, and the reason, so I didn't go through a haunted house like that. I think the only thing that didn't scare me was, so this house, it was just decorations. Like, it was just like supposed to be the stair decorations.
It wasn't an official haunted house.
No, it was just somebody's house that they put up a bunch of scary decorations. And it was probably like the dad at the end.
Yeah.
You know, and so he pops out with the Jason mask. It's not like he had a chainsaw or anything scary. He just popped out and like, you know, tried to do it like a pop scare kind of thing. And I just remember being like, you touch me, I'll sue you. And he's just like, ah. You know, and of course everybody else ran. I'm just like, okay, whatever. But it was one of those things of like, you know, you're in somebody's house, so if they do something to you, especially as a kid, you know that they're not, I mean, they're going to be held responsible for it, especially because you got other adults outside. So all you have to do is be like, oh, homie, like touch me or whatever, and then bam, hey, you know, they're in trouble. So I think that was the big thing for me. It wasn't like we actually went to a haunted house where there are consistent scares. Like, I think it was just mainly decorations, and then it was a pop scare at the end kind of thing. Crazy. So,
sorry, I hop back in your the thing. We're good. Sorry.
Guys. Yeah. Okay.
And then afterwards, I remember we were in the car, and she gave me a cupcake, and she sang me happy birthday. And so I was like, bro, I'm never going back to a haunted house ever again. And then I went the next year. But under different circumstances. Can I tell you about how I think I may have scarred my church kids during Easter?
Oh man, what happened?
I didn't scar any of them. But we did this thing where we brought them in for service, and there was this big room. So throughout the room, there'll be like different vignettes of like, okay, the Easter story, right? And so I remember the guy that was supposed to play Jesus backed out. And so I filled in for Jesus. Well, there was a scene where Jesus actually gets whipped. And so it was like, we were doing like, but we didn't do blood or whatever, but like, the person was like pretending to whip, and I was like, ah, ah, and I was screaming, bro. There was sound effects. There was everything, dude. And I'm like, I really hope I didn't scar these like kindergartens. But I remember like dragging the cross up the middle, and then like they put the cross in, and then they're nailing me to, I wasn't naked or anything like that. Like, you know how in like the Passion plays where like Jesus is just in his underwear. But I was like, okay, I'm going to keep the full robe on. And so then I remember It was kind of like how we did for Easter a year ago, where like, okay, I like my head's down all that, and now I got to change into like the risen robes. That's what I got to do.
Right, right, right. Real fast,
real quick. And I remember I didn't come out of the tomb, but like the angel rolled the stone away, and then the next scene was like Mary Magdalene at the tomb being like, where's Jesus? And then all of a sudden I come out from like behind the curtain. I was like, Mary, why are you crying? But the kids loved it. A lot of kids gave their life to Jesus that day. I don't know if it was because they were scared or what, but you know, it was great.
Hey man, there's something about fear that'll get people to, no, I'm joking.
I wasn't trying to scare them.
No, I'm joking. But no, that's pretty wild. I've seen so many of those. I think it's for kindergartners, it's one thing, but I think if you see those year after year, you kind of get desensitized to some of that.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, heard that they're going, like Mel Gibson and them are going to do like a sequel to The Passion of the Christ.
The Passion of the Christ.
here's my question. How do you do, like, what do you do? What do you do? Because unless it's like, okay, the third day he rose kind of thing, or in that whole storyline, it's going to be that.
Like the resurrection, like probably like after he rose from the grave, and then like Jesus's last days before he like goes back to heaven or whatever. But what's crazy
is even when he goes down to hell and takes the keys, or bro, what are you gonna do?
I would love to see Jesus kick Satan in the cojones, dude.
Right?
I'm just gonna let the listeners / viewers into my creative brain. This is what I want to do one year for Easter, right? So it's the Easter play, and Jesus, like, it's after the part where like Jesus dies on the cross, right? So then it's outside the tomb, and like the devil is like there's a person that's playing the devil, and the devil's rejoicing that like Jesus is dead and all that stuff. And all of a sudden you hear the intro music to Welcome to the Jungle. It goes and then from the rafters Jesus zip lines in. And then he gives the devil a stone cold stunner and pins him 1, 2, 3. Dude, would that be amazing?
Have you seen the church in the UK who, like, they incorporate wrestling into, like, they have a full wrestling ring, and they'll, like, incorporate biblical stories. They'll do, like, biblical stories, but just in, like, wrestling form instead. Dude,
that's the way to go. Exactly. I would give my life to Jesus again. I've already given my life to him, but I would do it again. If I saw Jesus ziplining and then kicking the devil in the face and pinning him, bro, talk about like a great Easter Sunday. Cause who doesn't want to see Jesus zipline in from the balcony and kick the devil where the sun don't shine? Like John Cena did with Cody Rhodes. Come on now.
That's great. No, that'd be fantastic.
Would you do Easter egg hunts for your kids?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Listen, man, there's a lot that I want to do like for my kids and like with my kids that I didn't necessarily do. I think that's a lot of parents, right? It's like, well, I didn't necessarily have that, so I'd like to.
Oh, dang it.
But it's like, I'll probably do Easter egg hunts with my kids, but it's not going to be like the whole money thing.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, I don't care either way, but will you do like Easter Bunny and Santa with your kids?
Probably when they're younger. But if they're anything like me, bro, and, you know, I've talked to my wife about this, and she's not like one to have had, you know, Santa, I don't know about the Easter Bunny, but like Santa for a long time. But by the time I was 4 years old, and my parents kind of screwed it up for me because they took me Christmas shopping. Well, yes, but they like took me Christmas shopping, and they were like buying all the Christmas gifts. And I remember being like, I really want that for Christmas. And they were like, oh, well, we're being Santa's helpers and buying it for your cousin. And then when Christmas morning showed up, then it was like all the gifts that was in the basket was for me. And I remember being like, wait a second, I thought you said that you were helping Santa. And that's when I like figured it out, like, bro, Santa's not real. You bought all this stuff. I remember you buying all this stuff. But I don't, you know, I'll try to be more secretive than that. But my thing is, there's a certain point, and I guess I think it's probably arbitrary to, I'm not going to let my kid go to be 8, 9, 10 years old and be like, yeah, man, Santa's real. One of those kids would like get into fights in school, you know, because I remember those kids. I remember fighting with them, be like, bro, Santa's not real. It's like, yes, they are. It's like, bro, we're almost in middle school. Santa's not real. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, I remember one time when I was like helping out with lunch duty at the school. There was like this fourth grader that still believed in Santa. And I was like, kid, you're a little too old. But here's the thing, though. And it's just a question. There's no answer and there's no thing I'm trying to like dig. But how do you navigate like your – it's like, oh, if my parents were lying about Santa, what else are they lying about? You know, like –
yeah.
How do you navigate that?
I mean, it was tough as a kid because, I mean, it was one of those things of, like, you do think that of, okay. And, you know, my parents did not like this, especially my mother. She was not a fan of this because that same story that I'm talking about, bro, I brought that up to her all the time. It's like, yeah, well, you lied about Christmas that one year. And she's just like, well, you let that go. Like, I would even talk about that when I was a teenager. And be like, well, yeah, well, you lied when I was a teenager. Like, a lot of it was trying to get under her skin. But at the same time, I feel like even if you're bringing it up, you're still processing like, well, I caught you in a lie and you're not supposed to lie to your kids. Now, I get that there are certain things, you know, you want to kind of give them a few fibs to have some magic and some wonder. But at the same time, when it's so blatantly obvious in your face, I think it was more, especially as a kid, I don't like using the word offense, so I don't want to say that I was offended, but you're sitting here going, man, they lied to me and they're not supposed to lie to me. But if they're, you know, like you said, if they're going to lie to me about that, then what else is going on here? Because if it's not Santa, then what is it? Easter Bunny. Reason I don't think that ever came is because I don't ever think that that was very highly promoted in my house. Again, I think it was a lot of the Christianity points, but I don't think Easter Bunny was very promoted. It was kind of one of those things of like, okay, it's cute because you could have Easter Bunny chocolates or you could have Easter Bunny shaped whatever, but it's like there's no real Easter Bunny that's going on. It's just a mascot for the holiday kind of thing.
Yeah. We never did Easter Bunny. I think I was too smart. If we tried to do Santa in my house, which I don't think we did, I was too smart. Because, like, I remember my parents trying to, like, they kind of tried to do the Tooth Fairy thing, but I figured it out, and I was like, I knew
it was too.
My parents putting the money under my pillow. Like, I didn't believe in no Tooth Fairy.
And I think, I guess that's kind of how I feel about how my kids are going to be, too, is, you know, for a little bit when they're really, really small, I'm sure that they'll probably, you know, believe it, and they'll probably be like, oh, that's great and whatnot. But there'll be essentially a point where they'll go, okay, I can tell. Because I remember Tooth Fairy, it got to the point, which, by the way, Tooth Fairy be paying out real good. I'd be talking to parents now, and they're like, oh, yeah, Tooth Fairy leaves them $20 a tooth. I'm like, geez, man. Yeah, like, I got like a quarter for a tooth.
The most I ever got was $5. Ever.
It's just like, bro, you don't get... I was like, I remember I got like a quarter, or even there was sometimes it wasn't even money. It was like a Hot Wheel, which back in those days, it was like 79, 89 cents, right? It was less than a dollar for a Hot Wheel. Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things of like, bro, Tooth Fairy wasn't paying out nearly as much as he paying out nowadays, apparently. But it was a lot of times, and maybe my parents just weren't very good at it. They just made it very obvious that it was them. Like Tooth Fairy, I just remember it being like, okay, you lost the tooth. And then I would see them walk into my room, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got 25 cents. How did that happen? Well, they just walked in there, so I imagine it's got to be them.
Look at God. You know?
Yeah, now, I think that's... Thing
I will... No, go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say is, like, Santa, what I will do, especially when they're little, is, you know, the whole little tradition where it's like they leave out milk and cookies and stuff like that. I'll wait till they go to sleep, and I'll eat the little milk and cookies and, you know, maybe leave them a little note or something like that. But again, I feel like you get to be 6, 7 years old, like, okay, I'm not gonna do all that now. I think it'll be like, okay, nah, your parents are buying you the gifts, and make it clear. I'm not gonna like break their hearts, but at the same time, I think by that point, I wouldn't have wanted to be fleeced by that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, if that's how it was, I don't want my parents to told me, like, hey, 10 ain't real. We're actually the ones doing this.
Yeah.
Like, but at the same time, like I said, I think there's a way to do it. But anyways.
Now, one thing I will do is, for as long as I can, I will let my kids think that wrestling is real.
Hey, man, why not?
Dude, my buddy who is really big into wrestling, and I consider him one of my closest friends. He's in my inner circle, but he texted me this weekend and was like, yep. He was like, his daughter's 10. He's like, yep, my daughter finally figured out that wrestling is not real. I didn't tell her. She figured it out on her own, and she started asking questions, and so I broke the news to her. And it's like, she figured out on her own. And I feel like I'm going to be that way with my kids. It's like, oh yeah, as soon as you figure it out on your own, then we'll have that conversation of, yeah, like, it is scripted and this is how it is. Like, he wouldn't let his daughter watch any documentaries that would break what's called kayfabe. And he was like, I don't want it to be ruined for her. I want her to figure it out. She'll figure it out eventually, but I want her to figure it out on her own. So it wasn't like he was lying to her, but it's like, yeah, like, she believes it's real, so I'm going to let her figure it out.
Yeah.
But she was 10. I mean,
it's gotten that way with, like, NFL and NBA. You know, I mean, those, they're scripted too. So, I mean,
there's still some adults that don't believe it's scripted.
But yeah, well, it is. I hate to break it to you.
Well, you got anything else? Unless you want to wrap this episode up, I'm kind of like, man, this was a great episode. We went, like, kind of in some unexpected avenues.
Yeah, we talked about Easter, we talked about Christmas, we talked about Halloween, we talked about all sorts of holidays on this.
One thing we did not talk about is 4th of July.
4th of July.
I like 4th of July. I just wish it wasn't so hot during the summer.
Yeah, that's true. 4th of July has always kind of been an interesting holiday for me. I kind of talked about going to Germany and moving to Germany. That's actually the day that we got there was 4th of July. And my family was stupid because I wouldn't say stupid, maybe just uneducated, because they didn't understand, like, hey, we're coming from South Mississippi. And so we showed up to Germany in shorts. And bro, it was like 50 degrees outside in Germany. And so I crashed. Good time to wrap it up. But anyways, so 4th of July, that's kind of, I'm still at it. Hold on. I thought I crashed out here, but still got a second here. But
I'm going to crash out if you don't. No, I'm just kidding.
But nah, man, 4th of July is a good holiday. It just tends to be real hot. It's like, if you're going to do anything, it better be in the evening time.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, nah, it's been a good episode, man. You know, as we talked about, by the time this episode airs, Easter Sunday will have commenced and been over with. So good luck with that. And then also WrestleMania will be done with by that point. And so I hope everybody we've talked about, and hopefully everybody that you're rooting for, does well. And if anything, if they don't, at least let the storyline be good and set up something for the future, right?
Oh, so, yeah. That's how it feels. Like, if they don't win, I'm okay with it. Just as long as the storyline is a good storyline. Like, I'm like, okay, man, they lost, but it's okay. This is going to be a good storyline. You just gotta hold on for the ride.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And one last thing, you know, you got to give a shout out to everybody was kind of interested in how when Vince McMahon left, how Triple H was going to do. But, you know, a lot of wrestling fans, including yourself and some other people that I've talked to, they really do believe that, you know, this has been a really golden age of wrestling and a golden age of probably the best storylines that they've had in probably 20, 25 years.
Because he used to be a wrestler, so he gets it. That boy cooking. I don't know what's in that seasoning, but that boy is cooking. He's cooking some good food, and we're enjoying it, and we love it. We love Triple H. He's cooking good. Triple H don't stop. Yeah, I ain't got nothing else.
I still think it's crazy that Linda McMahon, Vince McMahon's wife, is in Trump's cabinet. The Secretary of Education. It's kind of funny. But anyways, on that note, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. If you're still listening to us on audio, go see us crash some cars. And speaking of crash cars, gotcha. Or you got yourself on that one. But go see us on the Dota Box Pod, DoughNut Box Pod, over on YouTube. And for those of you who are watching us, we really appreciate you. Those of you listening, we appreciate you as well. And we'll see y'all next week over here on the Dota Box Podcast. Bye.
Want so much to give you this love in my heart.